From John's Gospel, chapter 8. They went each to his own house, but Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Early in the morning, he came again to the temple, and all the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery. And placing her in the midst, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery. Now Moses' law commanded us to stone such. What do you say?" This they said to test him, that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. And as they continued to ask him, he stood up and said to them, "Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her." And once more he bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. But when they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the eldest. And Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus looked up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." I like Halloween too. I like the idea of dressing up like a character. Dressing up like somebody I might want to be. Dressing up like somebody other than me, so I can present myself to the world in ways that, that on my darkest days might be less judgmental. And what Audrey and I were talking about a little while ago is really, well, it's always partially true, isn't it, that we all wear masks of some sort. My favorite social psychologist, Irving Goffman, called it impression management. But we do. We put forward a face, a costume, a character, and we hope that the impression others have of us will be favorable. And all of that, I think, leads to more or less pleasant, congenial, professional interaction. We are who others expect us to be. We live up to their expectations, and we do so largely with integrity and good humor. But all you have to do is take that one click up, and you have what can become a troublesome neurosis. It's called the imposter phenomenon, where you walk around in character, maybe so much, and you've refined that character to such a degree that every once in a while, a little voice in the back of your head says to you, "If people really knew who I really was, they would hate me, and I have to keep this mask on tight and present it so nobody will ever find out what's at the base or behind this character." The imposter phenomenon. What would we do if we were unmasked in the face of one another, or maybe even in a more frightening way in the face of the Lord High God? There's some interesting statistics and comparisons that I came up with this week. In effect, the woman caught in adultery is unmasked before Jesus. And what does he do? He relates to her in a way that's sometimes surprising, relates to her in a way that perhaps we would find surprising if we were ever unmasked in front of or in the face of the Lord High God. The National Opinion Research Center conducts every year the General Social Survey. And one of the variables, one of the questions they ask a randomly selected group of a couple of thousand adults is this: is your image of God more like a king or more like a friend? And then there's a continuum in between. But I think the threat of being unmasked and the fear associated with it has something to do with how frightening we imagine the character of God to be. And there's some interesting comparisons that I want to talk about for just a second. Those whose image of God is one of king were asked, "How happy are you with your life? Are you very happy, fairly happy, not particularly happy, or very unhappy?" The percentage of those who indicated that they were very happy or fairly happy that also had an image of God as king was about 38%. 38 or so percent of the people whose image of God as king indicated their lives were fairly happy or very happy. Those whose image of God was that of friend, almost 50% said their lives were very happy or fairly happy. In other words, their image of God was more consistent with one you might feel safer with if that God knew everything about you. Similar question, how happy are you in your marriage? People were asked. Those whose image of God was that of king, about 41% said they were very happy or happy in their marriage. For those whose image of God was that of friend, almost 56% said they were happy or very happy. An image of God that seems more accessible, that seems, well, more friendly, obviously, seems to contribute to people's overall sense of satisfaction, of happiness, of feeling okay, maybe, inside their own skins. So here we have this woman caught in the act of adultery. Very explicit language for our Bible. And they bring her before Jesus, not to really deal with her especially, but to test him. What do you think of such? And he seems utterly unconcerned initially. Utterly unconcerned. He's drawing a picture in the sand, for all we know. And after a bit of pressing and pushing, Jesus looks up and has nothing to say to the woman initially. He rather says to the crowd, "Let those among you that are without sin go ahead and cast the first stone," and they leave. And he's left with her, and they have this conversation. "Where is everybody that was here to condemn you? You've been unmasked. We know who you are. Neither do I condemn you." Here's the interesting piece. She's unmasked, but not by God. She's unmasked by the people. The people are the ones that are unmasked by Jesus when he asks them the question, "Who among you is without sin?" And their masks come off, and there is no one left to condemn her. They leave, she stays. She gets a special blessing. And I think it's interesting and useful to hold on to the idea that the day after Halloween is All Saints' Day. That when Halloween is over, that when all the candy has been accumulated and the parties have come and gone and we come home at the end of the day and unmask, we wake up the next morning. Well, we wake up the next morning saints. Can you imagine it? That at the end of a lifetime of living in character, that the day of our own sainthood comes and the mask is off and Jesus says, "Neither do I condemn you. Come home. Glad you're here. It's good to see you as you are." And I kind of wish all the people that left that little scene with Jesus and the scandalized woman, I kind of wish they had stayed because I imagine Jesus would have given them the same blessing. They've been exposed as those who are not without sin, to which Jesus, I think, would say, "Neither do I condemn you either. Go and sin no more." Well, good luck with that. But, you know, maybe go and sin less, because I think that once we are confronted and unmasked with something like, "Let he among you who is without sin," or "she cast the first stone," all we're left with is the authenticity of who we were created to be. We hear the words from Jesus, "I don't condemn you for being who you are." And the go and sin no more part, I think, would relate to, well, it would give us half a chance to be a little more tolerant, don't you think? And I think that it's intolerance and prejudice and discrimination that causes most of us to do most of the consequential sinning that we do one unto another. So let him unmask you. I'll let him unmask me. Take me out of character with the rather stiff rebuke although it's not like we don't know it and haven't heard it before. We are not without sin, and yet neither does he condemn us. Go and sin no more? Well, perhaps leave with the energy to be somewhat more tolerant, somewhat more generous in our view of other people. Because we certainly know that at the end of our days, when the mask comes off for eternity, we will hear, as will everyone else, "Neither do I condemn you." And at the end of the day, the only thing we can say when we are unmasked is thank God. Thank God today. Amen. And may God's peace that comes from God's unrelenting and never failing acceptance keep us strong, make us whole. Amen.